Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for Sunday Mass with Christian Arcand on WEEI.
Hour number two here at Sunday Mass. Not even going a full hour. We'll be done at 12:35 as I hand things off to Red Sox pregame. And joining me right now here on the Harbor One Hotline, he writes about the Red Sox for Mass Live. Him and Sean McAdam, Chris Smith, all those guys doing a great job with their Sox coverage this year. Chris Cotillo joins me here on Sunday Mass. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you for asking. Let's go ahead and start with something I saw you tweeting about this morning, and I think this is going to be a big story this week, but your colleague Sean McAdam wrote about Larry Lucchino's service, which was on Thursday, and a couple of people who were not there, John Henry and Tom Werner, not at at Lucchino's service on Thursday. Do we got some info on why? Do you have anything more on that, Chris?
Yeah, they invited a select number of media members who had covered Larry and knew him well. That was not, you know, me. I was not covering the Red Sox back when he was there, but Sean was there along with a lot of people that have covered the team for a while. And it was pretty clear at that point that John Henry and Tom Werner were not. From what Sean heard, John was sick with some sort of illness and Tom is in England. But, you know, they were here on Tuesday out on the field. Obviously they didn't speak to us. They didn't break from tradition there, but definitely, you know, a strange look from them for, you know, working with Larry Lucchino for as long as they did, building this brand to the point that they did, winning all the titles and rebranding Fenway Park. And so, you know, I think people are a little outraged over that and they probably should be. So that was a takeaway, you know, I think from those who were there. Sam Kennedy was there. Theo Epstein was there. A lot of luminaries, a lot of governors, former presidential candidates, you know, Craig Breslow was there. So the Red Sox were well represented in a lot of ways, past and present. But the two owners were not present for that funeral.
So, yeah, I was just going to say, like, it'd be one thing if it was a very small service and not a lot of people, it was just family or something like that. But that's not what the Bill Bradley was. I mean, there was a ton of people there. Like it was a big thing. And both John Henry and Tom Werner absent at it after being on the field. Didn't get introduced, but they were on the field, right, for opening day, where they had all that Lucchino stuff. They put the LL up on the monster. They had the video. He was prominently featured in. What'd you think about that American Pie video, by the way, Chris?
Yeah, it's tough with us because we, in the press box with the windows closed when it was freezing,
right,
couldn't really, you know, hear everything. So, you know, that was such a crazy time with Trevor Story being ruled out for the year and Pivetta going on the IL. We had Sean in charge of the 2004 stuff because he covered it, and I was 8 at the time, so figured that would probably be a better. But you know what? I thought the ceremony in general, you know, kind of strange choice of song aside, was nice. You know, I know some people were a little critical of the players not being introduced one by one, but I think it just made that day, you know, a lot more about the Wakefield family. You know, and to see his daughter throw out the first pitch to Veritek was a touching moment. And so while a celebration and while a reunion, you know, obviously a somber tone of losing Tim and losing Larry in the last year.
Yeah, certainly. And then the game happened, and everyone was somber after that, too. We found out before the game that Story was going to be done for the year. Pivetta had the elbow injury, we found out right before the game started. And then they go out and get smacked around by the Orioles. People wrote about how tense it was in the locker room and how down everybody was. Were you in there? Like, can you sort of convey just how dire things appeared after that game?
Yeah, I mean, I think Story speaks for itself. You know, the videos out there of him, you know, basically bawling his eyes out just about not being available for the next year. You know, this is a guy that was, you know, as he said, extremely durable during his time in Colorado, barely missed a game, and now has dealt with injuries for the last three seasons here since he signed the contract, which I think is, you know, unfortunate. You know, I hate when people criticize players for getting injured. You know, you've seen how you saw how it happened in real time, right? He dove for a ball, gave max effort, and hurt his shoulder, and seems like he ruined his shoulder, breaking a bone. labrum damage, obviously dislocating it, all that type of stuff. You know, he left it all out on the field. I don't know. You can criticize a guy for that. So, you know, just I think there was a lot of expectations around what his season could be for him to miss all but 8 games. I think that hit him in that moment, and that's why he was so emotional. You know, that's separate, I think, of the performance on the field. The other piece of it was, you know, Jaren Duran. Mm. And Jaren Duran, obviously a guy who has for a very long time been very, very hard on himself, a guy that, you know, it's been well documented, and I wrote about it first a couple of years ago about, you know, the struggles with depression and self-worth and all that type of stuff. And when he has a bad game, he takes it harder than almost anybody you've ever seen. And he was, you know, very clear about that, talking about how much he thinks he sucks and how much he's going to write in his journal and things like that. And, you know, it's just kind of part of it. I think, you know, I don't put those events together in terms of like, oh, this clubhouse is falling apart. Duran's hard on himself. Story felt horrible that he was missing the whole season. But, you know, you can't not notice how much of a gut punch the story was and then how the defense has been the last few days. I mean, those things are definitely linked. And I think their chances of going out and shocking the world like they said they might, you know, decrease significantly with him out for a while.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And for a team whose big, you know, strength going into the spring was the vibes, seemed like the vibes really took a downturn there after all of that. Let's get back to Story here for a second, because you're right. I mean, the defense has been dreadful, save from that last game where they didn't have any errors first time in like 4 days. Trevor Story going down, he's a great defensive shortstop. Is there really nobody in this entire system who can come up and play that position?
It doesn't seem like it. You know, I think they thought Romy Gonzalez was going to give them a little bit of a lift because, you know, they called him up and he'd been multiple positions as athletic and all that type of stuff. Of course, you know, with tradition, it seems he got hurt 2 days into being up, and David Hamilton seems like their best line of defense. I think everybody except the Red Sox recognize that the best way they could do this right now would be to put Sedan Rafaela at shortstop and move around the outfield. They just don't seem to want to do that. And it just speaks to, I think, the long-term view the organization's taking. They see Rafaela as a center fielder in the future, and so they don't want to move him off there. They see Von Grissom as their second baseman to the future, so they don't want to move him off there to plug a hole that they have right now. So, you know, they think Hamilton's okay defensively. The eye test sure doesn't back that up. The slingshot throws, the missed base, the bobbles, everything. You know, somehow they've downgraded from the Kike Hernandez experience last year. And I've characterized that for a year now as his daily target practice at the State Street Pavilion. So it's a dire situation at short. You know, there's no other way to put it. I do think, you know, maybe Pablo Reyes mixes in a little bit more there once Grissom comes back at second. Maybe once Ref Snyder's back, Rafaela goes a little bit there. But, you know, I just think they were counting on Story for so, so much. And to see, you know, now that he's going to be out, the drop-off is very significant, as we've seen over the last week.
Why does this team see, or the organization, I should say, seem so dead against calling up Marcelo Mayer?
He's not ready. I actually agree with them on that. You know, he's just not close to, you know, being ready. And I think going back to the point I made earlier, right, they've been talking about, well, first they said full throttle. That was BS. So once they actually started telling the truth, they really were talking about, you know, the long-term view or focused on the long-term. To call this a bridge year might even be overstating it in the view of the organization. And so they're not going to sacrifice long-term games for, you know, wins now. I think, just like I said, with Rafaela staying in center, Grissom staying in second, they're not going to rush Meyer's development, possibly, you know, speed him along and ruin something down the line to put him there now. He was hurt for a while last year. He has never played at AAA. He's only has, you know, X amount of games at AA. So, you know, if this is the Braves or the Orioles or a team in their championship window, maybe. But I don't think they're close to that right now. You know, I can't believe that they won't scour, you know, the trade market or, you know, some guy in AAA who can provide better defense than Hamilton. But for now, I don't think Meyer's on the table at all.
If Meyer had been hitting well in AA last year, do you think that'd be different? Like if he had shown some sort of promise at the AA level, because, you know, a lot of guys go right from AA to the majors if they're good enough. If he had done that, do you think they'd reconsider?
I think it was just about health. You know, his shoulder hurt was hurt from early in the season and cost him, you know, a few months. So I think they need to see him healthy and back in the groove, and he looks that way so far with the Sea Dogs. But, you know, he might have been able to reach AAA by the end of last year if he was healthy, and it would be a different story. But health get in the way, injuries get in the way there, just like they have in the majors. And I think you know, they still look at, there's a lot of development still to be done. You know, we saw like the good comp is the Orioles are, you know, a World Series contender. They won 101 games last year. If they rushed Jackson Holliday, you know, like maybe the Red Sox rushed Xander Bogaerts a little bit in 2013 because you could possibly win a World Series and you want your talent on the field, that's fine. The Red Sox probably look at it as this kid's not going to make a difference. Let's not screw up 3 years from now with them to do so.
All right, we're talking with Chris Cotillo. Chris, before we let you go, despite all the bad defense, this pitching staff seems to be chugging along, the starters anyway, outside of Tanner Houck, all had a good turn through the rotation this week. How sustainable do you think this is going to be? And also, do you have an update on Pivetta and his elbow?
Yeah, Cora said pregame that Pivetta played catch yesterday, felt good, expects to play catch again. I think the expectations there is that it'll be the three turns through the rotation, the 15 days, and he'll come up. Though Cooper Criswell is a guy that impressed him during spring training. You know, he pitched okay yesterday in four innings. You know, he had to pitch with a six-run lead, so wasn't necessarily a pressure spot. But I think they do trust him as a swingman type of starter. You know, I think, you know, they're looking at – I think Whitlock looks a lot better. Houck, other than yesterday, had, you know, Crawford, I think they see potential. And the guy I think that needs to take a step forward, and Cora kind of said this pregame, is Bayo, starting with today. If you look at it, the first few turns through, you know, Bayo, who's supposed to be the ace, has actually, he's not been horrible, but he has probably been the worst of the five. You know, a couple homers in Oakland, you know, up and down starts, and, you know, it's only a 4.11 ERA or whatever, but compared to the other guys, I think they're looking for him to take that step. You know, today would be a good opportunity at home.
All right, we'll leave it right there then. Chris Cotillo, thanks so much for the time today. Enjoy the game, enjoy the weather, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, man. See you.
All right. That's Chris Cotillo, Mass Live, joining me here on Sunday Mass. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. All your Red Sox calls, Celtics calls, and statue calls, which I see a few of you lining up to talk statues. We'll do all of that right after I tell you which.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Trending.
Sunday Mass continues right now with Christian Arcand on WEEI.
Short lead for Yoshida, being held on by Schonewell. The pitch. There's a drive to right field, hammered high and deep. It is back, and it is long gone into the bleachers. Tremendous shot off the bat of Tristan Casas, his third of the year. The Red Sox lead it 3-0. So there's the crooked number.
Speak it into existence, Joe.
Tristan Casas with a home run in yesterday's win over the Angels. It's Arcand here. Final segment before I hand things over to Red Sox pregame. Cooper Boardman's got your pregame show. And then it's Red Sox and the Angels. Brian Bayo. Sox try and recover their homestand with a win in this series, which would be a nice thing to see. And then right after that, we got, I think, four with Cleveland, and then I head out to Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates, who have been great to start the year. Cassius got in a little bit of hot water yesterday. I thought this was a little ridiculous that anyone cared about this. But Cassius hit a bomb. That home run you just saw, it was an absolute rocket. And after the game, someone asked him about, or I don't know if anyone even brought it up, but he was like, you know, I think that Ted Williams red seat thing, gets, like, I hit that ball as far as I've ever hit a ball in my entire life. I was nowhere near the red seat. He's like, I think that's a myth. And everyone's like, oh, you can't say that about Teddy ball game. Ah, the splendid splinter. Ah. That's what everyone said. David Ortiz also said that. David Ortiz said, no way someone hit that, that seat. Nobody hit that. So what are you talking about? Come on. Just think about it. Ted Williams, when he played, he was the greatest hitter of all time, sure. But he played before steroids. Think about Jose Canseco and Maguire and all, you know, Bonds and all these guys who were just juiced out of the Giambi, like all these guys who were juiced out of their gourd. Nobody ever came close to hitting that thing. And you're telling me Ted Williams hit it in the air? Eh. I think I'm on Team Casas, Ortiz, and Logic here. I like that there's a big red seat. And you know what else? It's when guys are throwing like a bullpen session before the game, they use it as like target practice. They chuck it up there. So if you're ever walking around taking a tour of Fenway before the game, walk over to the red seat. Sometimes you'll find some baseballs over there. After guys are done throwing bullpens, they try and hit the red seat from down to the bullpen. A little fact for you there. If you ever happen to be on one of those pregame Fenway tours, which I haven't, but we're over there a lot for the show, and I just can't stand being in the room with Jones and Mego any more than I absolutely have to. So I get out and start wandering around. They go up and wander up into the bleachers, and I see that happen. I see them throwing at the seat all the time. We were talking about statues on the text line. A lot of people are saying, Arcan, how can you forget the Rocky Marciano statue? Yeah, absolutely, in Brockton. Huge statue of Rocky Marciano. And in my home neighborhood of the North End, which I don't live anymore, but where I grew up, there's a statue of Tony DeMarco, of course, right outside in front of Mama Maria's. Maria's, which is a nice one as well. Tony DeMarco, who was, he's no longer with us, I believe. I think he died a couple years ago. But he was a North End legend with a great record, boxed in the 40s and I think 50s. Did he box into the 60s? I think he did. Yeah, he was a great boxer. Boxed at the Garden. And there's Tony DeMarco Way right down there by Atlantic Avenue. Anyways, that's a good statue too. For more on statue talk, let's go to Paul in the car. Paul in the car at 617-779-7937 has a statue take. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, it's Paula in the car.
What's up?
I'm sorry. But anyway, so this 30 years thing that you mentioned, mm-hmm. I mean, half the people that supported the team or the guy and bought the tickets, they'd be gone by then. So, I mean, I think the Bobby Orr statue was placed at the perfect time. So you can remember it, and the little kids can appreciate it more. You know what I mean? So
I
think you're way off.
Okay. And I've got people are texting me saying, oh, that's wrong. If you do it way after everyone's gone, then it's no good. That's not a good way to do it. I look at statues differently. And I know Bobby Orr is still alive, obviously, and I said I like the Bobby Orr statue, so maybe I'm being a little hypocritical here. But I just think that in general, a statue should be something that memorializes somebody. That's all. And, you know, yeah, maybe it'll be years later and people who watch them won't get to celebrate it. It's not like Tom Brady, for example. It's not like you're not going to get a chance to celebrate Tom Brady. I don't know if they're going to have a statue for him in June. I doubt it. But you never know. Robert Kraft's like desperate right now for some good press. So maybe he's got a whole Brady statue ready to go. I hope it's better than. Did you see that? I don't know if it was a statue or like just a bust, but do you remember that Ronaldo one where he looked like crazy?
It was maybe one of the worst ones I've ever seen. It was just the bust, and
you couldn't
even tell
it was
him.
Yeah, it was just his head. It didn't look like a person. It didn't look like any person who's ever existed.
It's like when those, like, I don't know what you call them, but they do those like cartoon paintings of like making people's faces look funny on purpose.
I know what
you mean. That's what that looked like. I can't remember the name of them, but that's what you would think it is.
If you have a Tom Brady statue, it better be like the best statue you've ever seen. Like Michelangelo's David, basically, is what the Tom Brady statue should be. It should be, because think about it. If you have a statue of Tom Brady and it's weird looking, everyone's going to say that statue blows. You know? How can you, the Greek god that is Tom Brady, the most handsome man to ever walk the earth, and this, you got this weird looking statue? No, that will blow up in their face if they do that. Belichick, maybe it's not quite as big of a deal. Belichick not really known for his movie star good looks the same way Tom Brady was. So, you know, you make him look a little weird looking in a statue, it's not exactly the end of the world. You make Tom Brady look weird in a statue, it'll be the statue will get panned. No one will like the statue. People will mock the statue. The Red Auerbach statue looks just like him. Bobby Orr statue, you don't really see the face on that thing unless you get, like, right under it. So, you know, I don't know if it even looks like him. Maybe it does. I'm not sure. I've never really taken a good look at the face on that thing. The Bill Russell statue, I say, is not bad. And all the ones around Fenway, I think. The Ted Williams with the kid, that looks like Ted Williams. The teammates all look like themselves. So they clearly know somebody who makes statues who's good enough at, you know, getting the face right. But with Tom Brady, you can't just get it right. You got to really get it right. You got to really get Tom Brady. You got to get that likeness. Otherwise, people will shun that statue. That's what I think, anyway. Anyways, before we get to the Red Sox, I wanted to do a quick exercise here as we look around the major leagues and see how everyone's doing in relation to how much money they spent in the offseason. Now, when I say in the offseason, I mean their total payroll, not just what they paid for in the offseason. But the Red Sox didn't do anything. Everybody's very upset about that. The Red Sox are 11th in the majors in payroll. Here are the top 10 and where they all are. Number one are your New York Mets with a payroll of over $308 million. They are 6-8, tied for third place in the NL East. Up next is the Yankees, $306 million. They're 12-3, best record in baseball. Yankees are nasty, by the way. Where'd that come from? Since what, like Juan Soto, I guess. I mean, hey, listen, you make a big splashy signing, you get returns right away. That's got to make you feel good there in New York for sure. Number three, that'd be the Houston Astros, $250 million. They are 5-11, last place in the AL West, second worst record in the American League. They got swept by the Yankees to start the year. So they got, you know, punched right in the nose and haven't fully recovered from that yet. I expect the Astros will bounce back. A lot of talent on that team. Number four is the Phillies, $245 million. They are 8-7, second place in the NL East behind the Braves, one game back. Rangers at fifth, the reigning World Series championship champions, $232 million. They're first place in the AL West. They're 8-7. AL West kind of sucks right now. Then there's the Braves, 229, just about 230. They're 8-5, first place in the East. The Blue Jays after that are the seventh highest payroll at 210. The Blue Jays are the seventh highest payroll? The Toronto Blue Jays. Okay. Seventh highest payroll at $227 million. They are 7-8, last place in the East. Then you got the Dodgers. The Blue Jays are spending more than the Dodgers. How is this possible? Is this list true? This can't be right.
Could be Ohtani deferring salary. They might have other people doing
that. You know
it.
What? I thought so I forgot about into that. It. Right.
Because he only counts $2.5 million or something,
right.
I think.
Which doesn't seem at all suspicious now, does it? Doesn't seem like a, like, oh, now we see why he did all that. He deferred all his money to, like, 2050. It makes a little more sense now, I think. Anyway, the Dodgers, $226 million. They are 10-6, first place in the West. The Cubs have the ninth highest payroll at $225 million. They are 7-6, fourth place in the Central. And then the Giants at $197 million are 6-9, nice, fourth place in the NL West. So there's your top 10. Pretty good mix right there. You got a couple of first-place teams, Dodgers, Braves, Yankees. The Phillies are right there, game back of first place. And the Rangers are first place in the AL West. Red Sox, by the way, 11th in payroll, $180 million. They're 8-7, tied for third. The best teams in the league, the Royals, 10-5. They're 20th. The Pirates are 10-5. They're 29th. And the Brewers have the best record in the National League at 10-3. They are 23rd in total payroll. We'll see. I want to track this all year. I'm going to track this and see how much of this stays the way it is, because there's some interesting stats and numbers here. Anyway, that's all for me. I want to say thanks again to Chris Cotillo. Thanks to Nico. Great job behind the glass. I'm out of here. I'll talk to you Monday at 2 o'clock. Actually, no. I'll talk to you Monday before the Red Sox game with the pregame show on Marathon Monday. Everybody have a good day. Enjoy the Sox. Enjoy the weather. I'm out of here. Bye.